This is a replay of the Thursday night, April 24th, WGN show. We started right at 10. If you don't hear yourself on it, it's because you didn't call. I hope you'll rectify that soon. We're live Monday through Thursday evenings from 10 to 1 Central. Dial 888-876-5593. My toll-free number from OneVoIP. For the world's best customer service, it's OneVoIP. Check them out at the number 1-VOIP.com. You'll be really glad you did.
Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. We have 3 hours to spend together. If it's on your mind, it'll be on mine, providing it has no consequence whatsoever. I say that because recently I've had some calls, and by the way, emails as well, wondering why we can't talk politics. We can't. We absolutely cannot. This is your respite. So for those of you who listen specifically because we do not talk about anything of consequence, good news, that's not going to change. And granted, it would be easier to do. God knows I did it for decades. There are several reasons, the biggest of which right now is we're sort of at a very vitriolic fever pitch in terms of our opinions. We're very polarized, and there's really no need to add to it. Nobody calls wanting to hear someone else's opinion. They call wanting to spout theirs, and that's fine. Everyone's entitled to their own opinion, but there are so many venues where you can hear political talk. I mean, I don't care what your outlook is, whatever your point of view is, there's something. If it's not on broadcast radio or television, it's online. So from the most out there to the usual suspects, you find it, and you find it continually. You are bombarded with it. So this is your respite. This is 3 hours of absolutely nothing matters. And so that's the way it'll stay. And I think I got some emails because last night we heard from a fellow who is not happy. And he said he'd call back tonight and tell us about his life. But the thing that I cautioned him is that we were not going to entertain any discussion of why he was unhappy based on anything that had political or government significance. Yeah, that's for somewhere else. All right, so that said, wanted to mention what I saw before the show. You know, here, the Easter egg hunt was actually in the news quite a bit because of the price of eggs. People looking for maybe something else to do. And Great Britain has the answer. They've got some villages that engage on Easter bottle kicking. I kid you not, two villages competing to transport three bottles in wooden barrels across a stream on the border of the two villages. So it is the bottle kicking contest. And they fill the bottles, of course, appropriately with beer. Two of them anyway. The third is the dummy. It's solid wood. And so according to the villagers, it was another exciting year. And apparently they have a chairman and an organizing committee. And apparently one village scored first. It looked like they'd do it again quickly. But apparently all didn't work out that way. Now, the interesting thing is bottle kicking is not a new sport. It goes back over 1,000 years to pagan times. Some local historians believe it dates back 2,000 years, and apparently bottle kicking is an Easter tradition like no other. Yeah, I'd agree with that. It's like no other. And yes, they say that bottle kicking is the game that inspired rugby. Well, members of the team that won this year's contest were lifted onto a local stone monument, and of course, you know what's coming, right? They got to drink from an open barrel before the rest of the beer was distributed to the crowd. All right, get down. So if you don't want eggs, maybe beer might be cheaper. Isn't that a sorry state of affairs? All right, so 888-876-5593-8888-Raleigh. And we're going to kick it off with Chuck. Chuck is a first-time caller. I'm so excited. He is in Milwaukee. All right, Chuck, welcome back to welcome to WGN Radio. Are you there, Chuck?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, good.
I just have a question for you. I notice that when you play these songs, you always seem to know the record label, even if it's an old, obscure song.
Yeah.
And I grew up listening to 45s, but we never paid any attention to the record label or the record company. And I'm just wondering if when you were growing up, was that a trend among your friends to memorize the record labels, or is that something you got into kind of on your own?
I don't know. I don't know what other people did. I was pretty solitary, but I can tell you that not only were labels important to me, but label art, the design of the art on the 45. Like I loved End Records, for instance. But I would look at the labels, and I'd want to know about them. I'd want to know who owned them and where they were. You know, because very often these were groups that maybe had one hit. And it was on some obscure little label, you know, like Blast or something. And I'd want to know about it. You know, you're from Milwaukee, so one of my all-time favorite 60s groups, the Esquires, were from Milwaukee, the Moorer family, and they were on Bunky. So, you know, it was important to know who Bunky Shepherd was and what his contribution was. So it's just something that always interested me.
Okay. I used to pay attention to the record label colors. I knew what color, if I was looking for a certain record in a stack,
right,
I knew what the record label looked like, but I never really thought to pay attention to the name of the label. So
right.
I was just curious.
Yeah, so did you grow up in Milwaukee?
Yes, and I've heard of the Esquires, but actually I did not know they were from Milwaukee.
Oh, yeah, get on up. Absolutely. That was as Milwaukee as it gets. You betcha. Okay. And, you know, you had some good soul radio. WAWA and WNOV were both terrific.
Oh, right.
So lots of good things, and lots of local things, too, and that's true in every market. There were some stellar local groups who just never made it out of town.
Right. And also, I have a request, a record request.
All righty, then. Let me get a pen and hopefully a piece of paper I won't throw away since I'm famous for that. All right. So, what is it you want to hear?
It's called Ain't You Glad You Chose Love.
Oh, okay.
And that's by Gladys Knight and the Pips.
Yeah, you betcha it is. Right, I'm writing it down, writing your name down too, so when I play it, I'll actually be able to give you a shout out. And Gladys Knight. You betcha, I'll do it.
Okay, great, thank you.
Thanks, appreciate the call. All right, so we'll try to do that tonight, actually. I don't know, I'm pretty sure it's on this computer, but we'll find out. And I did, however, the first bumper stumper is promised. That's right, if you were listening last night, you know I told Annette it would be our first bumper stumper, and John requested it too. So you'll hear it coming up on WGN Radio.
Chasing
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and that is Earth, Wind, and Fire, 1978, September. Yeah, where were you? I was doing mornings in Jacksonville. In any event, that was for Annette, and it was also for John, both of whom, and a big hit, obviously. Allie Willis wrote that. All right, so, during that song, I was just looking up best advice on how to clean pots on a Mackie mixer, because, you know, both studios, some of the pots are just noisy, and you know that it's dust and all of that. And of course, I've learned the hard way, there are certain things not to use and not to do. So I was just checking out what might work. Well, we'll see. You'll be the judge of that next week, because I plan to attack one of them at least this weekend. We shall see. All right. So with that in mind, more animals on the loose, a baby screech owl rescued from a Florida parking lot. I did not realize it was absolutely illegal in America to own an owl, because I can talk about this woman now because she's dead, right? They can't come after her. But there was a neighbor of my adopted mom's who had a nice house and a big screened-in porch. And on the screened-in porch, she had this lovely, huge, live owl. Yeah, with the most sonorous hoot, as far as that goes. And I always thought that was the neatest thing. It never occurred to me that she was breaking a few laws by having one. And by the way, you can, in certain instances, get a permit. I doubt she had one. But even with a permit, you don't own the owl. That's right. The Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation Committee, in this case, owned this particular owl in Pinellas County. We're talking St. Petersburg, a parking lot, and in other places, it still is government entities that own it. And what's interesting, of course, is that when you see, particularly a baby animal of any type, your first reaction should be, don't come too near it. Maybe mama is close. And, of course, that's kind of what you hope for. But in this case, the owlet, if you will, was in a Clearwater parking lot in Pinellas County and about to be run over by vehicular traffic. And so a deputy from the Pinellas County Sheriff's Office took it upon himself to move the owlet to a safer location. He didn't leave, however, because he was still hoping that a parent owl would be on the scene somehow, but no adult appeared. So eventually he knew that it was time to call Florida Fish and Wildlife Conservation, and he did. And they responded, and they took the owlet to a raptor rehabilitation center. And that's really the key. If you find young wildlife, assume that parents are nearby. But when it's immediate danger like that, you wanna step in. So you can't own owls. How about that? Now, we then have, there are times you see something and you're almost afraid to report it because you're firmly convinced that if you do, whoever you're reporting it to is going to assume you're drinking. Well, the zebra-donkey hybrid would fit into that category quite nicely, actually. And this was an escaped animal on the loose. It was a z-donk, a hybrid of a zebra and a donkey. There are such things, and actually it was on the loose from a breeding farm for this deal. Now, by the way, the z-donk hybrid has a donkey father and a zebra mother. This is not to be confused with the zonkey, which has a zebra father and a donkey mother. Okay, so you'll keep that in mind. Either way, the z-donk, of course, escaped from a farm and got into a residential neighborhood. And yeah, this is when you say, did I just see that? And police were aware because the farm is known for producing hybrid animals. And the officers said it wasn't neglect and there were no factors of inappropriate behavior. Occasional escapes are part of livestock farming. So the Z-Doc was not injured in its time on the loose and is back on the farm. So all is well. So I guess, yes, you can own Z-Donks, but I didn't. You know, I know there's a lot of animal breeding of different blends, so to speak. It did not occur to me that that zebras would be one of them, but indeed, apparently they are. So then, of course, Philadelphia, where you rarely expect to see livestock on the loose, especially not right in downtown Philly, or even the Northeast, like the guy who opened his front door and what was greeting him was a peacock. Again, that's the time you check yourself and, oh, wasn't drinking. And so that was the resident shut his door and called authorities. And animal rescuers showed up. And sure enough, the call was a peacock on the loose in the city. And yes, a fabulous feathered friend. And one person in the neighborhood, after it left the stoop of the individual who was stunned to see it, said, "It was strutting through the city like he had brunch reservations and no time to waste." You know, it's going to be that kind of day when your morning meeting gets interrupted by a wandering peacock. I guess it was. The peacock was safely captured and brought to the rescue there. No word on how it left the rescue, where the rescue was, or who owned the rescue, but apparently, yes, peacocks on the loose. So this led me to wonder, which, of course, is always a dangerous thing. Because, you know, some animals are very friendly to humans, or known to be. By the way, depends on the circumstances. So I thought, what's the most dangerous animal? Well, it turns out that it's not an animal at all. It's of the bug variety. And what kills more man than anything else? You may know this, actually. 720,000 a year? Mosquitoes. And of course, it's not from the bite itself, though you'll be scratching like it feels like it, but it's because they spread things like malaria. And of course, only the females bite. So female mosquitoes are considered the most dangerous animal in the world, though I loosely say probably not an animal. But we'll go through the rest of the list, too. I'm not going to get to humans. Of course, that had to be on the list. And of course, that's, as far as I'm concerned, a whole different deal. So we'll leave humans at number two and move directly to number three, killing 138,000 humans per year. What is it? You'll find out in moments here on WGN Radio.
Don't leave your food on the table.
Why, honey, why?
Because of those roaches.
Oh, crawling up your floor.
Roaches.
Oh, crawling in and out your door.
Roaches.
Oh, eat your food and walk the floor.
Roaches.
Oh, crawling up your wall.
Roaches.
Oh, crawling up and down the hall.
Roaches.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Yes, the Court Jesters, a medley of their almost hit. They released one record that was actually recorded at Reflection in Charlotte, and they were a North Carolina group. I don't know what happened to them, nothing about them, and actually the record came out in 1961 on Blast, which was a New York little kind of doo-wop-ish label. But Naoto in Japan wanted to hear roaches. Well, I'm impressed. And so, of course, I'll have to follow that as the next bumper with the annuals, Hungry, I'm Hungry, Don't You Know? Yes, going from North Carolina to Cleveland for that. All right, so we've got Jim. And Jim is, let me look here, on Jim is in Munster, Indiana. All right, Jim, now let me find my magic twanger. It's hidden suddenly. All right. Oh, here we go. All right. So, Jim, welcome to WGN Radio.
Well, hello, Raleigh. I'm calling again to tell you how much I enjoy your work.
Thank you.
And to tell you that John has got excellent taste in music.
Yeah, yes. It's a wonderful song. Yes.
A good friend of mine that helped me get my job at one of the major networks in Chicago here engineered that album.
Isn't that George? And, is that George Massenberg?
No, his name was Dave Antler.
Okay, because I know it was at George's studio. It was in West L.A. The complex Studio C. That part I knew, but
There was another studio in Chicago, PS Studios.
Right.
And it actually sits under McCormick Place right now.
Okay.
They knocked it down. That was at 21st and Indiana in Chicago. And the amount of music that came out of both of their studios there was just absolutely amazing. He worked with a producer. His name was Charles Stepney.
Uh-huh.
And he had a lot to do with the music that came out of the studio. He worked, also was a producer at Chess, and did a lot with the different bands that Marshall Chess had. One was Rotary Connection with Minnie Riperton.
Sure.
Minnie Riperton.
Sure.
But hearing that, I heard you say last night that you were going to be playing September. I said, well, I'm going to have to call in and say hello and how much I enjoy your work. And one more thing, I really, you've got some work on your hands if you're going to attack those Mackies this weekend.
Yeah.
I've got four of them sitting in my basement right now, and they really put up with a lot of abuse. I used them for, they were used in the broadcast industry. They put them in a lot of the minicam trucks that you would see out on the street, and they get bounced up and down, and the humidity and salt in the air and everything else, but they keep on ticking. But there's a big difference between the Japanese, the early ones, and the Chinese ones that you get now. That's what you might be experiencing but
I agree, because I have a lot of Mackies. We probably have a dozen, and you're right. The older ones hold up better, but I'm sure this is just too much dust in the wrong place. But I've learned not to use compressed air, because all that tends to do is just move it around. But going back to your friend Dave and his studio, I assume they did early Earth, Wind & Fire, and maybe even some of the Salty Peppers before they were Earth, Wind & Fire.
That was before I got into the broadcasting. He did a lot of blues and jazz out of Chicago, Buster Benton, and a number, it's just, I'm trying to think of all the stuff, and if he's listening right now, I'm probably going to get a phone call.
I'll get a phone call. But yeah, as far as I know, by the time September came out, Maurice White had moved to L.A. years before, and September was Studio C at the Complex, which was off of Sawtelle in West Los Angeles.
Oh, okay. Well, great. You know a little bit more than I do. You know,
I lived not far from it at the time. That's why I mentioned George, because that's the guy who really started that studio was George Massenberg, but that's definitely L.A. So now I got to look up PS Studios and read all about it.
Yes, the owner of the studio, his name was Paul Serrano, and he was a very good cornet player,
uh-huh.
And he played with it's just incredible that he the artist that he played with, but he owned the studio. And a lot of engineers that started in Chicago that moved to L.A. Oh, I'm trying to think of the name of the engineer that engineered Michael Jackson's album. I can't think of it right off the bat. It was the Thriller album, and he started, and he was working in the same studio here, and a number of other studios in Chicago. A lot of the guys moved around, you know.
Sure, absolutely. I think I know who you mean, because sadly he died, and that was Bruce Swedien.
Absolutely.
And he died. We talked about him on the air, sadly. Of course, Quincy Jones produced it, but Bruce was amazing.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. So we talked a lot about that, but I was just looking up PS, and Paul Serrano talks all about this. I can't wait to read the rest of it. I'm even looking at a little picture.
One interesting note with Paul Serrano, they bought Chess Records. They bought when Chess was bought out by GRT, they bought the studios, and not really for the studios or the mixing boards or the microphones. They bought it for the disc cutting system.
Okay.
The Neumann, I believe it was a Neumann disc cutting system that was just unbelievable. And my good friend Dave Antler is just a master when it came to, you know, disc cutting, you know.
And, oh, yeah.
And there's quite a history there, but it's all sitting under McCormick Place.
And, oh, man.
And there's a couple things on Google, you know, the story of the lost tapes, where they just knocked the building down and just buried everything that was inside of it.
So, oh,
I'm sure. I don't know. Makes me wonder where the equipment went. But anyway, once again, I wanted to tell you, I enjoy your work, and John's got good taste in music.
All right. Call me again. Thank you. I appreciate it.
I got a couple of requests that I'll put in when I call you up next.
Okay, good. I'll look forward to that.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Okay, thanks. Okay. Paul Serrano, who at one time was a student at the music program at DuSable High. How about that? And, of course, a trumpeter before settling back in Chicago. And he did a lot of session work throughout Record Row, probably both of them. And so he had opened up, I guess, his first studio on East 23rd. All right, I can't wait to read the rest of this. This will be fun. And yes, indeed. All right, so 888-876-5593 is 8888-RALEIGH. And as I say, we played Roaches by the Court Jesters, so I kind of have to play Hungry by the Annuals. They sort of fit together. Coming up on WGN Radio. James. Well, there they are, Cleveland's own, the Annuals, and that's a medley of their almost hit as well, I'm Hungry. And that was actually on a excuse me, a little Cleveland label, and they put it out as both Con, C-O-N-N, and as Marcon, M-A-R-C-O-N-N, which I assume is, you know, some family in Cleveland. That's the only Marcon or Con release, and that's the only way we know about the Annuals, but we do know they recorded it in 1958. All right, so there you have Hungry, I'm Hungry. All right, so 888-876-5593. 8888-RALEIGH. If it's on your mind, I'll make sure that it is on mine. And there were a couple other stories that. I was going to tell you more about these animals, and the mosquito being the most dangerous, which I thought was interesting. But the list, they put humans at number two, humans killing human. But as far as others, number three. What do you think? It probably won't surprise you. Again, the deal is that they use the word animal very loosely in this particular Science Focus article because they consider number three to be snakes of all varieties. 138,000 humans a year meet their destiny by a snake. And so that's the deal. And you know, most are not dangerous, but those that are can kill humans in various brutal ways, actually. The black mamba can kill a human with two drops of venom, but the likelihood that you'll actually meet this snake is nil, pretty much. However, pythons can swallow a fully grown adult whole, and we know about that. So venomous bites is usually the culprit, as opposed to being squeezed to death. But it happened. All right. Number four. Oh, man, this is shocking. Dogs. Now, of course, you know, when you first read that, you say, oh, my God, dogs, you know, am I going to be attacked by pit bulls? No, it's probably not your house pets. It's because of rabies. And rabid dogs kill 59,000 people a year somewhere. All right. So with that in mind, let's see what number five is. We're back to bugs again. Assassin bugs. What the hell is an assassin bug? Okay, it's the one that gives us Chagas disease. So it's a blood-sucking predator, don't you know? Now, scorpions are number six, 3,300 humans per year. Yeah, we see them all across the place around here. And most of the light-colored, almost yellow ones are probably not as dangerous as what's going on the North African or Middle Eastern deserts, but not to be trifled with. I know the first time John got a scorpion bite, it was off to the emergency room for him. Yeah, now, unfortunately, he's had some sense, and he recognized what the problem is. All right, so seven is crocodiles. Yeah, that makes sense, doesn't it? Eight sort of saddened me. Elephants. But then again, with that size, you can see, and they only kill 600 human beings a year. And yes, elephants never forget. I don't know whether they trample the people they don't like or what the deal is, but when you're talking about an 8-ton animal, it could just be a mistake. Yeah, somebody could be accidentally knocked over and stomped on. Elephants have been known to use their trunks to pick up and throw humans and then smash them into the ground. But again, this is a small amount of elephants. The tusks are good for goring, too, as far as I go. Nine? Oh, man. I would put this almost at number one as far as I'm concerned, and that is the hippo. Now, granted, it only kills 500 human beings a year, but that's because most of us are, and certainly those in Africa, know not to be near the hippo. And there are some who are surprised because it's an herbivore, but that does not matter. If you look at the size of this beast and the size of its chompers and the aggressive nature of the animal in general, they can cut a human being in half with just one bite. And a lot of force, too, three times that of a lion. And, of course, they're very territorial. And so they'll attack a human when someone approaches the habitat, regardless of reason. And they're also known to tip over boats and kill those on board, mistaking them for predators. I've heard about them eating cars and things like that. But the other thing is the hippo will eat its own kind. Usually out of desperation, but nonetheless, yeah, that's what you're dealing with the hippo. And number 10 is the lion. Yeah. Well, 200 animals, 200 humans a year, that's not a big amount of kill. The lion, king of the jungle, actually doesn't live in the jungle. The deal is the lion is a ferocious predator that you don't want to mess with. So that's the list. All right. Any surprise you? 888-876-5593. That will take us to Robert in Stickney. Hello, Robert. Welcome back to WGN Radio.
Yeah, Raleigh. In your show a little bit earlier, there was that song about roaches. I thought of there was another song back in the early 60s. I don't know if it was just popular in the Chicago area or if it went national. There was a dance called The Roach by a duo, Gene and Wendell.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, it was kind of a fun thing. I mean, it lasted maybe about a week or something, but it was, you know, but I seem to recall it from time, you know.
It's bugging all the kids from coast to coast. Well, Al, it's bugging all the kids from south side of Chicago to the north, maybe. But yes, absolutely, the roach, Gene and Wendell. I think I have it on this computer. They give you instructions too by stopping and stepping and skipping. No, I'm not going to stop, step, or skip. Thank you. But hang on a minute. Don't go away. Stay where you are.
All right. Sure.
And that's where we'll pick it up right after the news on WGN Radio. WGN Radio, I'm Ali James. If it sounds familiar, well, maybe you saw the movie Hairspray because it was in it. And, Robert and Stickney, I don't know if I remember Gene and Wendell. It's an L.A. record, actually, and it's got some interesting luminaries behind it in some ways. Alonzo Willis co-wrote it, and you're saying, who the hell is that? Well, he also co-wrote Puddin' and Tane for the Alley Cats, all the Phil Spector productions. He did a lot of work with Phil Spector when they had Phyllis. His older sister was Betty Willis, who did quite a bit as well, but his younger sister was Carolyn Willis. Now, Carolyn was in the group that backed Gene and Wendell. If you have the record, then you know that it says Gene and Wendell with the Sweethearts. So you're saying, well, who are the Sweethearts? Well, one of them was Carolyn Willis. Now you're saying, where do we know that name? Honeycomb. That's right. Eugene Washington, Wendell Jones. Eugene's brother was also in the L.A. music scene as well. Wendell Jones, I know nothing about him other than this, but definitely an L.A. record. The Spats covered it, I think, on ABC. But it's like I say, Alonzo Willis co-wrote it, and Nick Vinay's brother was the other co-writer. So it's a sort of well-known record, but not a hit at any time. But yes, it was in Hairspray, and Robert brought it up. So there you go, Robert.
Oh, great, great, yeah. I know I don't want to take up too much of your time, but your first-time caller was talking about record labels, and there was an interesting 78 RPM from my folks record collection on the Vogue record. It was called Vogue, the picture record. I don't know if you know anything about that label.
Well, there were a lot of 78 RPMs, but yeah, Vogue, they did shellac, and in the shellac was a picture, And, you know, the picture may have absolutely nothing to do with the record, which is the funniest part. There were a number of, they were kind of known as the Vogue Picture record label. And so this is like latter 40s. And
for my folks' time, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know that you'd really ever want to hear it, you know, as far as that goes.
Oh, this one, was it was a country duo from that time, Lulu Bell and Scotty.
Oh, okay, yeah, that's actually one of the better ones. Better than Art Castle. What is it?
Oh, yeah, have I told you lately that I love you? I know everybody and his uncle did that.
Exactly.
One, yeah, yeah. It had a picture of a man in the service and his girlfriend with a like snowy background and all. Yeah.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Like I say, and you know that's pretty available as far as that goes. But yeah.
Oh. Uh-huh.
I think you could probably get it on YouTube right now if you wanted it. But they would have things like there's a train conductor waving to a woman and waved to me.
Yeah.
You know, but like I say, some of them loosely fit the song, but some of them didn't.
Yeah, I still have that 78 from my folks' collection.
Oh, sure.
It's just a nice memento, you know.
Absolutely.
From the Warriors and all. Yeah.
Sure, it's a collectible. Yeah. No doubt about it. So sure.
Oh, it is. Oh, great. Yeah.
They were around, like I say, not too long, but it was the latter 40s, and they would embed this artwork. And I'd say the 47, I know. I'm not sure that they ever were around in 48, but 47 was the big year. And there's probably three dozen of these. And, and you're right about country. I think Patsy Montana had one as well. But there was other things, you know, somebody and his orchestra. You can name somebody, whether it's an Art Mooney or whoever, you know, it was a lot of orchestra,
right.
You know, so that was their gimmick. Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting as far as that goes. There is actually an Association of Vogue Picture Record Collectors. Now, you see, I wouldn't think it would be hard to collect all of them. So, you know, there just weren't that many. But sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it would be interesting to know how much, you know, I mean, at least to know a little bit about it as far as a collector.
Yeah, it'd probably go for $50 if you're wondering. I mean, it's not a terribly expensive deal.
Right, yeah.
But
yeah,
you have it for the sentimental sake, and that's worth more.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, yeah. I can't put a price on that. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, anyway.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, it was the company that owned it was in Detroit. And it was a guy who was an inventor. And I'm trying to think, it was a company name. I'm trying to think of what, you know, like Safeway or something like that. And it was that. And they produced it in Detroit. And I'm trying to think of. Tom Safaday, he was the inventor. So I guess it's Safway. Because it would be his name. It could be Safeway. I don't know. But it's something like that. You can actually look that up if you're interested. Something like Safeway Industries. Yeah. And like I say, 47, a lot of them. Maybe one or two in 46, but I don't think any in 48. I think that somebody owns that label now. And so they're probably doing some reproductions in it. It's someone like Bear Family. I don't know. Somebody like that. It might be Bear Family. I don't know. But someone bought the rights to it because obviously Tom Safaday isn't alive anymore. And So that was a deal. Yeah.
Well, I was born in 47, so there's another little sentimental reason, I guess.
Right. Well, your parents probably got it while Mom was pregnant.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Good deal.
Okay, Raleigh. I'll be talking to you again then.
I hope so. Thanks. Appreciate the call.
Okay.
All right.
Sure. Bye-bye.
And we greatly appreciate Robert not asking us to play any of these. Oh, man. But, yeah, there were all those gimmicks. You know, that was also the time where they used to have those kiosks in places where you could record your own record. And you didn't have to be like a singing group. You could record something that you'd, you know, send to your brother overseas or something, whatever. But there were a lot of different things in the latter 40s. 888-876-5593. Oh, James has some stories. And I have the Mills Brothers coming up because I promised that I would play that. So I will. And we'll get that Gladys Knight on for Chuck in Milwaukee as well in this hour right here on WGN Radio.
Cab driver, drive by Mary's place. I just want a chance to see her face. Don't stop the meter, let it race. Cab driver, drive by Mary's place. Cab driver, once more round the block. Never mind the ticking of the clock. Only wish we could have had a talk. Cab driver, once more round the block. Cab driver, once more down the street. There's a little place we used to eat. That's where I laid my future at her feet. Cab driver, once more down the street. Cab driver,
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. And yeah, that was a request from last night, if you were listening. And the interesting part about that was John and Covington wanted to hear it. Is normally we think about the Mills Brothers from way back in the day, but Cab Driver actually recorded in 1967 on Dot. All right, so that's what John and Covington wanted to hear, and now he has. So 888-876-5593, 8888-Raleigh. All right, so it is the lovely James on the south side with the stories for tonight. How's it going, James?
Oh, I'm hanging in here. I'm glad. Thank you for taking my call. How are you doing?
Well, I can't complain. Nobody would listen if I did. So here we are. Yes, what floated your boat in terms of current stories?
Okay, I tried to, like, sometimes what I ended up doing is I'll send you a group and let you, like, pick
no,
the three.
No, I saw that. See, it doesn't work out when you do that. I just dump them all. Because, you see, the problem is sending them all, let's say I log on and see I've got 2,000 new email. I can't go through most of them. I just dump them.
Okay, but I only sent, like, I think about five.
Yeah,
you're
right. What can I tell you?
There was the thing about the saying it'll be a bad year for ticks.
Yes.
That goes back to another thing about bugs. Yeah.
Well, the interesting thing about that, and I did read that story actually. I didn't know you sent it, but I can see why you would. It does have an Illinois component to it, and they are predicting it's going to be a bad year for aggressive species. And there you have it. Not only Illinois, but the Midwest. And they're basing this partly on weather, I think, you know, as far as that goes. So spring and summer, the peak pest seasons, don't you know? And ticks are no fun, that's for sure. And I think the article probably went over the three ticks you're likely to encounter. The dog tick, and poor dogs.
The wood tick, yeah.
Okay. And the problem is on one of them is, and I think that it's the dog tick that is the primary spreader of Rocky Mountain fever. And probably the one that people are of biggest concern is the deer trick, which a deer tick, which can wind up giving you Lyme disease.
Yeah, you don't really want that. Yeah,
that's, well, right, exactly. Yeah. So we've got a number of ticks involved, but the question, of course, is how do you protect yourself? And obviously, long sleeve shirts, which people are not always doing in the summer, and long pants. In other words, the more you can cover yourself. But the bottom line is how much can you do it? They do have insect repellent, and they have, some people think of the more toxic brands and say, I don't want to put that all over my body. But there are natural repellents, you know, lemon and things like that. How well they work, I don't know. But I guess the bottom line is if you're going to be out in the spring and summer, be aware that you're joined by things that you otherwise cannot see.
Yeah, because sometimes you feel something, you say, uh-oh, and you look, and you see something buried in your skin, and you're like,
yeah. Believe me, or then you see the big red surround and the bullseye, and you say, oh, God, I got something now. And maybe you do, and maybe you don't. That's not always the case. But so anyway, I would say if you've got a pet that can be effective, you want to watch out for that. Now, that, too, is controversial because there are, you don't hear about it too often, but there are a number of household pets that have been killed by the preventative flea and tick medicine. So you need to know the breed of your dog and the likelihood that they're going to be able to tolerate whatever it is you're going to put on them.
Yeah. And, okay, then let's see. I think I'm trying to think of, there was another one that kind of got me a little bit. There was the, I'm trying to see my phone, the one that was, there were two that really kind of got me, and I can't seem to see them. But, let's see.
Here, I'm going to trash. I can find you in trash here. And, I see the pest series one. All right, the dog attack and drinking urine to improve your health. All right.
That was grody. Yeah, that's why I figured I gave it pretty good odds it would get tossed before it ever got seen.
Well, you know, actually, it wouldn't have gotten tossed if I saw it, because this is an ancient practice, and there are individuals who continue to feel that this might be healthy. The risks are greater than the benefits. I'm not saying there couldn't be a benefit. I'm just saying, there will be a risk. And you've got a number of people online who are espousing this, for instance. And you've also got reality shows that involve it and all this. So it's likely that people are going to at least hear about this. And again, people have been drinking urine for literally thousands of years. And, in terms of what can go wrong, it's greater than what might help you.
Yeah, it was also one of the first hair colorings.
Yeah, well, it's a lot of things. And, I just think that bottom line is drink a lot of water. Yeah. And,
you'd be better off, a lot better off.
Yeah, and because they talk about the cleansing and detoxification benefits, and
it puts your kidneys at a risk that, okay, let's put it this way: nobody wants to spend 5 to 6 hours being cleansed, because you could have just simply have minded of not doing something.
Well,
like that.
There are people who still believe, and there's that old wives' tale that urine is sterile. No, urine is not sterile. It has natural low levels. Hang on a minute. We'll talk about it coming up on WGN Radio.
You
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. It was Chucky Milwaukee, our first caller tonight, who asked for Gladys Knight. Ain't you glad you chose love? Interesting song. It was never a single, at least other than as a bootleg in the UK, but never actually released as a single. 1968, it was an album on Soul, a Motown subsidiary, and the album was Feelin' Bluesy. And Smokey produced that album, and in the case of Ain't You Glad You Chose Love, he wrote it as well. And it became a big Northern Soul hit. The Beat would do that, I would assume. And meanwhile, that's why I say you'll see Boots in Great Britain on it. But realistically, if you want the official stuff, you got to get the album Feelin' Bluesy. All right. I prefer the vinyl. 888-876-5593, 8888 Raleigh. And that takes us back to James on the South Side. We'll wrap it up with this. And I'm glad this came up because there are people who actually will, you know, hear things or see things online or on some of these reality shows and say, oh, I'll try that. And in the case of drinking urine, like I say, that's thousands of years old. It is not sterile by any means. And there's two reasons it's not, without being too graphic. One is, of course, that there can be low levels of bacteria in the urine itself. The other is the urine has to leave the body. And on the way, on the way out, things can happen. We'll leave it at that. The other thing is it's a lot like seawater in this situation that you're going to actually lose more water than you're going to gain by drinking it. So it's a natural dehydrator. So the bottom line, it ain't sexy and it ain't fun, and who really loves water, but drink it for God's sakes. That's as simple as that.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, the one other thing about I think it was like a story, another one of those insects ones, and it was from Texas, even though the thing that sent from Africa to Africa, I was worried about sending it until I read it. And I said, no, this is about from Texas, where apparently this family, their 2-year-old had gotten bitten by fire ants.
Oh, I did see that. The child died in the hospital. That was a while ago, I think, yeah.
Yeah, so I said, no, it's probably got a little time on it, too.
Well, so yeah, I said, they're suing the hospital over that, and I guess we'll see.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, you have a great weekend.
You too. Thanks for calling, and thanks for the stories. Okay, bye.
Okay, and I'm sending you another music thing.
Oh, all right, very good. All right, so there you have it. Yes, and a big thanks to James. He sent me a little article on Bobby McClure, and it's neat because, of course, this is going back in time. And, quite the artist, and we played quite a bit of Bobby McClure. Not only the Fontella Bass duo that everybody knows, but, yeah, maybe we'll play some of that tonight, actually. Ken in Chicago, welcome to WGN Radio.
Hi, Raleigh. I'm back. How are you?
All right. How about yourself?
Okay, just taking care of family.
Oh, man. Well, it's in some ways it's a thankless job, but bless you for doing it.
Yeah, Mom died a year and a half ago, and I was shocked that you knew they had her on IV dilaudid.
I'm sure.
Which is, I asked the pharmacist, he says, that's a lot stronger than morphine. And you were the only one that knew exactly what I meant.
Oh, yeah. No, dilaudid is the absolute best if you're looking for an analgesic, providing you're not going to live, because one of the side effects is brain lesions. But, man, it's the cleanest analgesic out there.
Yeah, but her age, 88, like all pain medication, suppresses the breathing.
Well, among other things, yes, the respiratory things. But it just fouls up the bodily systems completely. Who's ever touched that stuff knows that, oh, my God, constipation to a level you've never encountered.
Well, on a lighter note, when I was growing up, an old wives' tales was, to cure acne, you take a baby urine in a cloth diaper and you wipe it on the face.
Oh, God.
That's what I was told.
You know, I guess now that I think about it, the thing when I was young that people tried was using like Ajax and like ripping their skin open. And it's like, what, you know, it's puberty. It'll go away.
Yeah, did you ever hear of WD-40 for arthritis? I've heard that several times.
Right, exactly. Well, you know, let's face it, if you've got rheumatoid or psoriatic arthritis, you're going to try anything you can possibly think of. But yeah, it for the most part isn't going to do you much yeah. good. But, you know, when you're 13 or 14 and you get acne, it's the end of the world. Right. You don't realize that this will resolve.
Yeah, but if you're going to... if you're going to drink your pee, you're in a lot of trouble.
It's alarming that it's becoming popular again because of some of these reality shows and things that are online. Take Dr. Google with absolutely no credence whatsoever. Do not.
People go to Dr. Google, Raleigh. It's terrible.
Well, you know, I've told the story many times because, you know, I'll look too on some things, and this is about 20 years ago, and John was off on a film shoot, and I was at home, and I was reacting. Do you remember the story? I was reacting to a substance that was prescribed, and so I looked it up, and I'm reading it, and you know, I'm having all the symptoms, and well, anyway, after a couple of paragraphs, I'm practically hyperventilating until I got to the part that talked about dull coat, and I realized, oh my God, I'm reading an animal journal, veterinary medicine. So yeah, then I had to laugh. Yeah. So yeah, you just can't.
Dr. Google can create a lot of anxiety.
Yes, yes. So
I just remember your story with the brown recluse.
Oh yeah. Oh yes, absolutely. Yes. You know.
I remember that a year or two ago.
Yeah, of course. So the bottom line is, if you are going to look online, take it with less than a grain of salt.
Right. Can I request two songs?
Yes.
All right. One is Caravan of Love by the Isley Brothers.
Oh, okay.
And my favorite Skyliners is I Die by Jimmy Bowie.
Yes, absolutely.
That's not played enough.
I agree. Oh, I Die is a wonderful song.
That's my favorite Skyliner.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
If you could play that tonight, because I won't be here next week.
Where are you going?
Just out to my brother. My brother's going through chemo and radiation.
Okay.
I'll talk about that next week, about things with cancer hasn't changed in 50 years.
No, sadly.
Surgery, radiation, or chemo.
Well, and that's why again, if you're going to do this, you really, really need to research it and get somebody very good to help you. But very often, some of the alternate theories are the way to go. Now, you know, I Die is the flip side of Since I Fell for You, so I don't know why.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yes, yes, 1963. If you have the original ATCO 45 and flip it over, it's I Die. And
I didn't know that. I do have that. I will look at that.
Yeah, you flip it up, and of course, Jimmy Beaumont wrote it. I'm surprised too that it didn't get more play, but you will hear it.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
All right.
And then Caravan of Love by the Isley Brothers.
Yes, yes.
Good.
Okay. You'll get them both.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Good deal.
Bye bye.
So 888-876-5593-8888-Raleigh. We'll get to Eduardo in Tampa. Ooh, back to Jobs. And we'll get to one of Ken's requests. Probably I Died next on WGN Radio.
If the sun should forget to shine, I don't think it would bother me. But if I thought that you were really mine, I'd die. Oh, can you see? I'd smile and say that's how it goes. But if there were to be no you and I'd die. heaven knows. Take every star out of heaven, and I just couldn't care less. But if you take your
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Yes, just a classic. Jimmy Beaumont and Joe Rock wrote that. Pittsburgh's finest, I'll tell you what, the Skyliners, I'd die. Yeah, a much-ignored flip of Since I Don't Have You. By the way, I've mentioned this before, but if you're ever playing oldies trivia and anybody asks you how many U's are at the end of Since I Don't Have You, in the Skyliners version, there are 13. All right, so we have Roger, a first-time caller in Illinois. Welcome to WGN Radio. Hello, Roger.
Yes.
Yeah. Welcome.
Well, who is this?
This is the person you called, the person you're listening to.
Oh, Rally?
Yes.
Oh, gosh, you sound different on the phone.
I do. I don't know what to make of that.
Yeah. Well, I've been meaning to call you, and I never had enough courage to call.
Oh, I'm glad you did.
Yeah, and I enjoy your show. I can't say how much it's much better than listening, watching TV at night.
Thank you.
I have a quick story for you, and maybe you can help me out with this. It's kind of a cute story, but I was between jobs for a while, and I was driving a limousine from O'Hare Airport with people, but I would drive in the morning, and then I would share my ride in the afternoon. Another gentleman would take over in the afternoon. And big, tall guys, white hair, all come back like Elvis Presley and blah, blah, blah. I knew he played the guitar, but I thought he just kind of played like some of the local bars around here. But after a while, I left the business, and about 20 years later, he called me up, and I had left, and I started an air duct cleaning company with my son.
Yeah.
And he called me up, and he said, Roger, he said, this is Hayden Thompson. He said, you know, I don't know if you remember me or not, he said, but I have some work for you to do here at my house. If you're still in that business, give me a call. So I call up this house.
Yeah.
His wife answered the phone, Georgia, and I said, is Hayden there? And she says, no, he's on tour. And I said, oh, I thought maybe he took a vacation, like a vacation type tour.
Right.
And he says, he says, no, he's over in England right now. And he goes over there two or three times a year. He goes to France. He goes to Germany. He's real popular in Europe, you know.
Right.
So I said, she goes, did you know that he's a member of the Rockabilly Hall of Fame?
Yeah.
And I said, I didn't know that, you know. So I ended up going to his house, went over there. At the end of the job, he sat at the end of the table, and he was playing some songs. And I said, well, I wrote a song. I said, would you play it for me? And he goes, what does it sound like? And so I wrote it out on a napkin, and I gave it to him. He goes, kind of give me some idea what it sounds like. So I can sing it for you if you like, or just bypass that. It's not real long.
Yeah, go for it.
Okay, here we go. All right. Every time I look at you, I wonder where went wrong. Where's our love between you and me? And every time I see your face, it brings back memories of a love in a different time and place. Well, now, wouldn't it be nice if you could live your life doing all the things we only dreamed of? Throwing out the bad, all those things that made us sad, and our love will always hold an magic. Well, I thought it through and through. Well, I'd spend more time with you doing all those things we only dreamed of. Coming back to you, and I hope you want me to. Together, we can make it happen. So.
That's great.
Thank you. Well, he recorded that song, and he came by my house the next day, and he gave me a CD with my song on there, and along with all the brochures and stuff. But I had no idea who he was, but I looked him up on YouTube, and he's got all these different songs. And he's from Tupelo, Mississippi.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you're aware of him, but he said he recorded on Sun Records and
yeah,
a few other things. But and that was the reason he always drove the limousine, was that he kept calling over to Europe two or three times a year, and he couldn't have a regular job where people would let him go that often, you
right.
know, so...
Right.
Can you tell me what you know about him?
Yeah, he was from Mississippi, right? Actually, I think it was Boonville, but he was doing the Southern Melody Boys, and they made a record that caused them to get a slot on the Louisiana Hayride. And hang on a minute, don't go away. We'll talk more about this right after the news. All right, pick it up right there on WGN Radio.
There's a train that leaves from Chicago. Yes, it leaves at 11:09. 1688 would buy me a ticket. I ain't got a dime. No, I ain't got a dime. I left home just a young man, seeking my fortune and fame. Things have gone bad, not a break have I had. Oh, what a crying shame. Oh, what a crying shame. Now I found me a job washing dishes. 1688 is my goal. When I get my pay, I'll be on my way. But for now, it's pan pots and bowls, poor boy. Now it's pan pots and bowls.
WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and that is Hayden Thompson. And I see all over the place they spell his name H-A-Y-D-E-N, and it's not. It's H-A-Y-D-O-N Thompson. And he was around a long time as far as that goes. And originally, he did stuff, like I mentioned, in Mississippi and wound up on Louisiana Hayride on KWKH. And that was an entree to Memphis. A lot of people who've been on the Hayride wind up in Memphis. And so he was. And in fact, it was on one of Sam Phillips' label, Phillips International, that they released stuff on him, Love My Baby. And that gave him a tour with Billy Lee Riley and others. And after that, he moved to Chicago. And he was hot at this point. We're talking the late 50s, and he got a residency at the Rivoli, and that at the time was a country music venue, and maybe you remember it. Now, what happened in 66 is he recorded 1688, which, as far as I know, was a train song. Obviously, you heard it just now, but it's so funny because when you look it up, there's a lot of places that have a dollar sign in that 1688, so I don't know what to tell you about that. But anyway, it was actually on Quill originally, or the people at Quill did it, which is a local Chicago label. We'll talk about that later. But Cap picked it up. And the reason I played 1688 is not that it was my favorite Hayden Thompson, but because that did well enough that Cap released an album on him. And until the mid-80s, that was the only album the guy ever had. And so he continued in the latter 60s, but that was a tough time for most people who weren't of the genre of the moment. And so that's when he left the music industry and worked as a limo driver. And that's when Roger was working with him. And then he reemerges and still working and stuff like that, but doing all the revival tours on you know, on rockabilly stuff. And in fact, when I was still at Billboard, Charlie Records, which was a reissue label, they're wonderful, except the word was they didn't pay the royalties, I don't know. But I was still there when they released an album of his in 1985, which was interesting because a lot of the stuff was R&B, early R&B. But no, there was also a Thompson record. So you betcha, that was Boonville, Mississippi Flash was the album that Charlie released. And there were others as well. And, you know, because of the European tours, a number of other albums that came out after the fact as well. As far as I know, he is still alive. And, yeah, he'd be about 87. So, Roger, fill me in. What did I miss? Roger? Speak to me, Roger. Are you still there, Roger? Oh, no. We've lost Roger. I hope not, but let's try it again. I think Roger could be gone. Oh, well. All right, Roger. Well, thanks for calling, and thanks for bringing up Hayden. And I hope you'll call again. And we can talk about him again. And maybe he's calling her now. I don't know. You know, when the news is on and stuff like that, when I'm in the studio that is near Scottsdale, the bottom line is you hear silence. So if you're on hold and you're thinking you got hung up upon, you didn't. And if it's just that you got tired of waiting, I understand. All the way around. Yeah, but as I say, when I thought about that record, I thought about the release on Quill. And then I thought, Quill was this little Chicago label, and there was actually one of their releases in 1966 I thought was great. And we're by the way, going to play it next. And what I'm hoping, I never thought about doing this, but I'm hoping that someone in Chicago will remember this group or know anything about it, because I have looked and looked and looked, and they're basically kids, and it's probably a garage record, I don't know. But I just loved it. And the Ricochets, two T's at the end of Ricochets. And Losing You, 1966. So if you knew any of the Ricochets, or heaven forbid if you were a Ricochet, oh man, be still my heart, call me and tell me all about it, and you'll hear Losing You. But right now, you'll hear from Eduardo in Tampa. So, Eduardo, welcome back to WGN Radio. Eduardo? Eduardo's not there either? Oh, this is not good news. I hope that this is not a problem with the phone system. Please tell me it's not. And I also hope that it is not a problem with... am I talking to myself again? Well, it happens. All right, we'll find out in moments right here on WGN Radio.
When we met, I hoped that you would be my own.
That either. All right, so we rebooted the phone system and it seems to work. So if you want to call back, actually, you should be able to reach us. It's one of those nights, I can tell already. 888-876-5593. 8888 Raleigh. Yes, and if you know anything about the Ricochets, let me know. So 1966 on Quill, Chicago area band. Like I say, it sounds like they were high schoolers, and they might have been, but I thought it was a good little record. And never to be heard by anybody else, I guess. But hey, I played it a little in Florida. Yeah. All right. So we'll also get our Isley Brothers, which actually was Isley Jasper, Isley request on there, which I said I would. And your calls and your requests are in fact, coming up. So 888-876-5593, 8888 Raleigh. I don't know what to do about that pot. Well, if worse comes to worse, I'll just pick another one. All right, so it's sort of like that. All right, so I believe that Roger is calling back, and that's good news to me. So we'll find out. Find out the rest of the story, what he knows about Hayden. But that's what I know, which is maybe not enough. All right, so let's see. Is Roger back? And it's probably all my fault. So, Roger, are you there?
Yeah, I am here. Right. I wasn't sure if I did something wrong. I've never called in the radio program.
Oh, well, yeah.
Before,
well, so. And this, I mean, we're as close to a Dixie cup and a string as you're going to get. And okay. And since I am the engineer involved, I can say any bad thing I want about it. And yeah, it's not good tonight. Not the best night we've ever had. But anyway, I'm glad you called back.
Yeah, I just appreciate taking my call. I appreciate the history on him. I was going to ask you. He lives in Wheeling, Illinois, and I see him occasionally. But he's in his mid 80s now. I know he was. I think last summer he was going to do a tour down in Georgia somewhere. But do you ever interview people on the radio? Like if I ever have them call you?
I don't exactly interview them, but if he would call, I would love to talk to him. Sure, and or if he wants us to call him, we'd be happy to do it. Sure. I think that's great because he's got plenty of stories to tell, that's for sure. And a lot of people who were big in rockabilly, they were much bigger in Europe than they were in the States. You know, Charlie Gracie was one, and it's not at all unusual. I just hope he got his royalties out of this stuff.
I'm not really sure. I know... Yeah. I don't think he's driving the limousine anymore. He's too old, but I'm sure he enjoyed talking to you or vice versa.
Oh, yeah. I would love it.
Okay, I'll tell him we talked and
if he wants, you can pass his phone number on to John and we'll call him if he prefers to do it that way.
Okay, I will clear it with him first.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then I will talk to John and then.
All right.
Okay, that'd be great.
Sounds
good.
Good
luck to you. Enjoy all your history. And I'm 79, so a lot of the stuff you talk about goes way back, even actually beyond me, I think.
Yeah. Well, it's great to have you. You're a youngster for this show, and we're delighted you called.
Okay, take care.
All right, thanks. Appreciate it. So 888-876-5593. All right, so all we had to do was reboot the ATA there. It's not gonna be as easy for the board. I can see that already. Things are, but you know, we're not live again until Monday. Of course, I'll be in another studio Monday, but that means Saturday. I'll make time Saturday. I'll schedule it right to play with the board and try to make sure it's not a goner. Well, we'll see. All right, David's a first time caller. We defer to them, you know, and he is in Chicago. So welcome to WGN Radio.
Well, thank you. Listened to you a lot, but never called in. But I was talking to somebody. I just had a birthday on the 1st of April here. 82 years old, so I've been around for a while.
Uh-huh.
Or 28. I get those numbers confused.
Okay.
Anyway, the old, whatever happened with, or how did it start? Or I know when I was growing up, payola.
Oh, okay.
When they were doing all that and people got in. I don't know if anybody went to jail or anything.
No one went to jail, but there's nothing illegal about it, and I'll get to that. But one person, Alan Freed, did plead guilty to commercial bribery, but I'll get to that. You know, the record industry was not big business at all, really, until after the Beatles. The Beatles changed the record industry more than anything else, and not because of their music per se, but because of their popularity. They were the first rock and roll group to sell albums in big numbers. And then, of course, you had a lot of other album acts coming in the 60s. Then the music business was big business. But before that, when you're talking the 50s, there's not a lot of money in records. In fact, if you go back to before the 40s, all the money was in sheet music. It wasn't in vinyl or shellac back then. It wasn't in anything like that. It was just the songs, and they had song pluggers from the publishers. But okay, so here comes the dawn of the 1950s, and we're starting to see R&B getting very popular in smaller smaller stations and things like that. But by 54, we're starting to see rock and roll. Now, the difference, by the way, is the amount of records you're selling. To give you an idea, let's just go back to when the record industry was huge, like, say, 1970. If you had a number one pop album, it sold maybe a million copies. If you had a number one country album, it sold maybe 20,000 copies. If you had a number one soul album, well, you may get 100,000 out of that. So obviously the goal would be to sell the pop albums. But anyway, so back in the day, here's R&B. It's not all that big, but here comes Top 40, and this is going to be mass appeal. Now, if you're a record company, unfortunately, you are tying 100% of your promotion budget to airplay. Because after all, how else are these kids going to hear it? Well, so the idea of paying for play, that made a lot of sense. It was just like paying a salesman. Why wouldn't you do that? Now, legally, if you were a licensee, meaning that you actually owned the station, it was against FCC regulations to take money. Now, when I say that, you could take money as long as you identified it. So if you wanted to say, we're playing Little Richard brought to you by Specialty Records, that's legal. It's identified. But of course, nobody did that. But of course, it wasn't the licensees who were getting the money. It was usually the disc jockeys, because back then, there was no such thing, for the most part, as a program director who decided the music all 24 hours a day. Each individual disc jockey was popular because of his ears, basically. If you listen to old Alan Freed tapes, guy was terrible as a jock, or Art LeBeau, horrible, Huggy Boy, just a crime. But these guys knew exactly what to play. And so they were huge. All right, so are you going to pay them? Of course you're going to pay them. Now, problem is that when the guy in New York is playing at an Alan Freed, then next thing you know, a guy in Cleveland is playing it, and then a guy in Buffalo, you have what's known as a rolling hit, because it's not hit simultaneously. The holy grail is, how do you make a record a hit all across the country? Well, by 1957, there was an answer when American Bandstand went national. And of course, the original host of American Bandstand was not Dick Clark. But by the time it went national, oh, yes, it was. All right. So you had record companies falling all over themselves to give money to Clark and the people surrounding him. Because, of course, if you could have that record hit simultaneously, you'd have a number one record. So all was fine. And again, was not illegal. All right. Now, let's pause for a moment and look at Congress. So here.
One second.
Yeah.
The station wasn't giving the money.
No, the disc jockey was, because he was picking his own music.
And he actually had checks being sent in?
Well, I mean, it wasn't illegal. It was just, you know, the record promo guy would come, and here's a $100 bill, you know, in the record sleeve, and, you know, we expect you'll play it.
Like to pay our athletes.
Yeah, now, the difference is that the guys who were really successful were not going to take money for stiffs, because they knew darn well their popularity was dependent upon playing the right records. They understood that. So they were only going to take money for the stuff that they knew would help them and be hits, as far as that goes. But and in fact, Alan Freed always said, I never took money beforehand, I always took it after the fact. Well, regardless, if you wanted your records on Alan Freed, you were going to be paying them. All right, so this was the deal. Now, like I say, let's leave that where it is. That's the prevailing practice, all right? Now, let's move to Washington and talk about the House of Representatives. They're having a fine time because they're investigating the quiz shows. And they are just, as you know, the quiz shows were fixed. And so here comes 1959 and, you know, 21 and everything else. The scandal is over and all that. Now, so we know what Congress does as far as that goes. I want to pause and talk about the second annual disc jockey convention at the Americana Hotel in Bal Harbour, Florida, designed to uplift the image of the disc jockey. Well, it didn't work out like the first one, that's for sure. At the disc jockey convention, this was, at the time, by the way, top 40 disc jockeys were not that far from child molesters. They couldn't get apartments, they couldn't get bank accounts, they were considered to be the friendly guy in the black sedan, all right? So the purpose of Todd Storrs' thinking was, we're going to have some dignitaries, we're going to have some other people, and we're going to put in this conference showing the disc jockeys as fine, upstanding people. I'm going to leave that right there and go to the news. Stay where you are, and we'll pick it up at that fateful convention. Don't go away. All right, we'll tell you more about the Paola hearings on WGN Radio. WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James, and Ken in Chicago wanted to hear Caravan of Love, which was Isley, Jasper Isley, in 1985 on CBS. All right, so we just left our disc jockeys having a hell of a time at the second annual disc jockey convention in Miami, Florida. This is Memorial Day weekend, 1959. Are you still with us, David?
I am. Okay. Still
all right.
All ears.
All right, so here is this convention that's going to uplift the image of the disc jockey. Now, of course, it's going to have a lot of entertainment as well. And Morris Levy from Roulette is said to have flown in every hooker on the East Coast. Not sure if that was true or not, but there were a lot of them. All the labels were there, giving out all manner of things in every way conceivable. Now, in the case of the girls that Morris Levy brought in, the ladies of the night, they were recognizable by the disc jockeys in that they were wearing a lovely green gown, any shade of green would do, but that was the key. Now, let's leave the ladies and the disc jockeys there and say, remember that the idea is to uplift the image of the disc jockey, so we're going to bring in luminaries. Now, Pat Boone's going to come because Pat Boone is a big recording star, and he's going to bring with him the governor of Tennessee. That's right. Give him hell, Clement. So he brings Clement with him and Clement's wife, Lucille, quite the fashion plate. You probably know what's coming. And so it was, Lucille did not get the message about the green dresses. And that's exactly what she was wearing when she and her husband, the governor, and Pat Boone walked across the lobby. Now, this Fondle Fest is rarely mentioned, but needless to say, Clement was mad as hell. Now, here the convention is, like I say, it's almost like Sodom and Gomorrah. It is a truly good time. Well, the Miami Herald writes this article. A freelance journalist writes it, and the headline was Booze, Broads, and Bribes. And it talks about all the Baca Canal of the disc jockey convention. All right. Now, let's say that there's one person who's not in attendance. He actually came the previous year in Kansas City to the first annual convention, but Mitch Miller did not show up. Now, what do we know about Mitch Miller, who is head of A&R for CBS Records? We know that he hates rock and roll. He hates it with a purple passion. He hates it to the point that he firmly believed to his dying day that the only reason a disc jockey would ever play a rock and roll record is that they were paid to. He believed that. So meanwhile, once the quiz shows are over, he's calling representatives of the House of Representatives to tell them to investigate this payola. Well, that didn't go anywhere at first until Clement got home to Tennessee and picked up the phone and called one of the representatives and said, I think you need to investigate this. And so that is when all hell broke loose. By the way, very few people know about these green dresses. I was there. I know about these green dresses. Anyway, that started the hearings. Now, Interestingly enough, again, it was not illegal for a disc jockey to take money. Well, that would change, but at that time it wasn't. It was absolutely illegal for a licensee to do it. Now, ABC, let's go to them for a moment, and Goldenson, who is so thrilled that he escaped all of the quiz show scandals because ABC didn't have any. So he was just beside himself with happiness until he realized that due to these payola hearings, ABC was in the middle of plugola. Now, how did that work? Well, in addition to American Bandstand, they gave Dick Clark a Saturday night show. We all called it the Saturday Night Beach Nut Show because it was sponsored by Beach Nut Gum. But in addition to that, one of the major airlines was also sponsoring it off the books in the form of paying for a mention that promotion and air travel is sponsored by. Well, that would be fine if promotion and air travel were sponsored by. But all that happened is money was changing hands. Now, this show was owned jointly with Dick Clark Productions and ABC. So you can imagine Goldenson at home in Westchester County damn near died. He was fit to be tied. Now, we also have good old Alan Freed. And remember, Alan was the king of rock and roll. And when he joined ABC from WINS, even the lawyers said, well, now that you're with ABC, we'll expect that you'll play a lot of Ampar product, you know, the ABC Paramount product. Well, so now here's the deal. ABC has to find a way to get out of this. And so what they do is they make all their disc jockeys sign a statement that they never took payola. Well, of course, Alan Freed, I don't blame him, wouldn't sign it because he knew that was perjury. So he doesn't sign it and he doesn't know what's going to happen, but he's pretty unhappy. And why is he really unhappy? Because it seemed that Dick Clark got a pass. ABC called Clark to Westchester County to meet Goldenson for the day to craft a statement. In other words, they whitewashed it to the point that Clark got off scot-free. Oh, he was forced. Goldenson forced him to divest his record labels and his publishing company and all the other things. But by and large, he got a pass. Alan Freed never recovered from that because he did not understand why he was left to the wolves and why Clark got off scot-free. But in the end, this big waste of time, nobody is convicted of anything. The FCC, meanwhile, says, we got to make a change. And so what they do in 1961 is they create some sections that basically, not basically, that made it illegal for the employee to take the money as well. Now, again, not at all illegal to take money if you disclose it, just like a sponsorship. The reason that the airlines, I'm not going to mention the airline, I know what it is, but I'm not going to mention the airline. The reason the airlines were a problem was, again, because the Beach Nut Show didn't disclose it. They did disclose it, but not correctly. You know, they said that travel was paid for by, and it wasn't. So anyway, that's the way it ended up. Now, Alan Freed was such a broken man, unfortunately, that when it came time to New York, to the district attorney in New York City to get him for commercial bribery, he absolutely could have fought it. But at that point, he's like, I'll pay the fine. And he went to Palm Springs. Well, first he went to Miami. That was a debacle. I'll go into that some other night if you care. And then he wound up in L.A. By 1964, he was in Palm Springs, and he died of a bleeding ulcer. And so that was his story. And, of course, Dick Clark went on to untold wealth. But so that's the payola hearings in a nutshell. Any questions?
Not really, but I'll tell you, I never realized it was that involved.
No, really, if this were another venue, I could talk for the next 24 hours about this.
I just wonder what happened to the ladies in green.
Well, they did all right, I think. You know, they were used to going to venues. I think it was ABC Paramount that actually paid for every cab ride. And I remember this very well, because if you got in a cab, it was absolutely free for the weekend, anywhere in Miami Beach, I remember, courtesy of ABC Paramount. I made some cab rides. But so anyway, and then RCA had a casino in the Lanai Room where basically they were giving you play money. Well, the only thing about the play money, it was good for real stuff. So disc jockeys were walking off with colored televisions and all that. Oh, it was a really good weekend. It was much better than any of the other conventions.
You're making me jealous. I wish I was there.
Yeah. Well, you see, they couldn't kick me out because fate happened. I was still a kid. Fate happened that I lived in the Americana Hotel. So the only thing was, for the weekend, I had to give up my poolside cabana, which happened very often with conventions. But yeah, they couldn't get rid of me completely. So yeah, that was it. And there are books written on it. And I guarantee you, other than the book I wrote in 2010, you will not hear about these green dresses, because that was lost to history.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Absolutely. I hope you'll call me again, David.
Okay.
All right. Thanks. Thank Appreciate you. It. Bye-bye. All right, so 888-876-5593, 8888-Raleigh. And yeah, my book is absolutely free to read, as you know, at this point. I'm not doing a reprint, and I got really upset that people were selling it for hundreds of dollars on, like, Amazon. That's ridiculous. WorldRadioHistory.com, the whole thing's there for free. Read it if you want. All right, so we have Eduardo in Tampa calling back. So, Eduardo, what's up? Eduardo once, Eduardo twice. Oh, no, this is how it started before. Hopefully Eduardo just went to bed rather than the phone system failed again. Tell me no. Just tell me no. Let's see what Carl in Riverside has to say for himself. Hello, Carl. Welcome to WGN. Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no. All right, I'm going to try another line here, and then we're going to reboot this again. I'm sure it's some test of wills or whatever to see what it takes for me to implode. Yeah, that's they say it's possible to die from spontaneous combustion. On nights like these, I feel maybe I'm going to. We'll try Fran. Are you there, Fran? Please be there, Fran.
I am here.
Oh,
can
praise,
you hear me?
Praise Jesus. Yes, 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 yes.
When I could still hear you coming through on the phone, I thought, I'm still probably here.
Yeah, yeah, right. You were there, but I don't know. So I don't know what the heck happened to a few of our callers, but they scared the living daylights out of me.
Yeah, especially when you get more than one. You
know,
you
oh, yeah, exactly. Like, exactly. Okay. That you know you are descending directly into hell.
It's not that somebody just had to, you know, hang up or something.
Yeah, right.
But, yeah, I'm trying. I told John I was going to turn into a chicken.
Oh.
Because I'm trying to think of, because of eating, you know, this soft food stuff. And I really, they were pretty vague about what that entails, because most food is soft.
Right. They mean soft on your digestive system.
Yeah, so I know it's bland, you know, I don't want to add too much stuff to the eggs and, yeah. You know, and that sort of thing. And I didn't have any bacon, which broke my little heart.
Oh, I know. I don't blame you. How many ripe bananas can you eat? Yeah. How much applesauce do you want, and do you like avocados anyway? Yeah.
Well, the thing is, too, like, I love cheese, but cheese, from what I understand, and they didn't say don't eat, because they didn't say not eat, to eat dairy, because she told me to eat yogurt.
Right.
You know, she wants me to eat a whole bunch of yogurt.
Ugh. Oh, yeah. Or the kind of cheese they want you to eat are the things you're not going to want, like cottage cheese or ricotta cheese or, you know, things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
The soft cheeses. All the good cheeses are hard cheeses, let's face it.
That's true.
So, you know, I mean, if worse comes to worse, you go to Walmart or whatever, and you look through the baby food section and see if there's anything pureed that you're willing to eat.
Yeah, I thought, well, I wonder if anybody has any ideas. Although I don't know how much longer I'm going to have to do this. She didn't give me any time frame.
Right.
Necessarily. Just,
well,
you know,
part of it is your body's got to speak to you to see how you're feeling.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because there's not really a way to have like a timetable when you're dealing with digestive things. When you're theoretically giving your body a chance to recoup. I mean, the other thing to do would be, you know, to do something that was, you know, like those horrible diets I've done that basically was water for 2 weeks, you know. So,
oh God,
I know.
Yeah.
I did that for 3 weeks, actually, hard, and I'm still here to talk about it. Hard to believe, but
oh my God, I don't know how you did it.
Easier than most people, because if I don't like it, I won't eat it. And most of the things that I might have been able to have, I wouldn't like anyway. But what they're really saying is, here's what you can't eat, and that's what is important here. Forget about nuts. Forget about seeds. Those two are the absolute worst. Forget about raw vegetables. Forget about meat, any meat that is tough or stringy. Like, you know, if you wanted a spring for a filet mignon, as long as you trim the fat around, that's probably okay. But you're probably not going to spring for a filet mignon. So you probably don't want to do that.
And I thought,
Salmon's good.
I had that.
Fish is good.
You know, I'm going to make up some tuna stuff.
Right. Stay away from anything that has a hard or a crunchy texture.
So it's probably not a good idea to have that tuna on a sandwich.
Correct. Well, unless, but you see, here's the thing. You could probably have it on soft bread. You know, that there's a lot of, God forbid, whole wheat breads, you know, but maybe 19 grain or whatever. You just want to check that there are no nuts in this or seeds in it. But if there's no nuts and no seeds, and if you trim the crusts, you can.
Yeah.
You know, so.
I've got sourdough.
Well, okay, but see, sourdough is magnificent. Sourdough is God's gift to us.
They don't have real sourdough here. I've got what you can get in Texas.
Oh, that's a shame. I look at the ingredients, and if it says yeast anywhere in there, I know it's not sourdough. All right, so it's got to have sourdough starter and nothing else. Now, with that in mind, though, sourdough very often, if you're talking about it in slight spread as opposed to in rolls and stuff like that, you can cut the crusts out, and the sourdough is usually soft enough.
Yeah. I know earlier I was eating some soup, and I thought, I've got to have something solid with this. So I made a piece of toast and dunked it in there until it was practically falling apart.
Well, right. Usually it's just the crusts. You don't even have to dunk it otherwise. And also, cooked white rice, especially if you put it in a soup, that's fine. You know, that's all right. You can have pasta, but of course, if you like it like me, really al dente, where it's damn near crunchy, you can't do that. But, you know. If you turn it into, oh my God, I forgot it was on the stove last week, then you can probably eat it without a problem. You know, like, okay. All right, you mentioned cheese. You could get away with mac and cheese, providing, again, that the mac was very well cooked, that it was mushy.
Right.
But if you're willing to do that, you could have that. And, of course,
yeah.
You know.
Well, usually I just cheat and make something in the, you know, Stouffer's or something.
Well, right. The problem with Stouffer's or lean cuisine, because they're both the same thing. I mean, you know.
Yeah, pretty
and,
much.
You know, and of course, there's no such thing as Stouffer's or lean cuisine. These are made,
right.
You know. But when you look at the ingredients, oh my God, there's other things that will upset your digestive system. You know.
It's probably the case in most of the stuff that I eat, but.
Yeah. Yeah, no, Nestle makes the Stouffer's stuff, which, you know, ConAgra makes a lot of frozen food. You really, I know, I'm not kidding that. Yes, you and the animals.
Purina, Jack in the Box, or one of them is owned by Purina, and so I used to joke about Purina People Chow.
Right, oh, exactly. Well, the funny thing with ConAgra is healthy choices ConAgra. All right. Marie Callender's, Bird's Eye, others, you know, Banquet, that Chef Boyardee, this is all ConAgra, Slim Jim's, what else? Orville Redenbacher's, Hebrew National. So there's a lot of things owned by ConAgra that you wouldn't expect were.
A lot of household names around
that's
here.
That's right. When you start looking at it, there aren't many people who make this stuff, and they make it under all sorts of names. Hunt's is ConAgra. I mean, I could go on and on. You know, you probably look it up and see more than I'm telling you. But anyway, ingredients. So when you're worried about a digestive problem, there you want to really look at ingredients. You want to eat as clean as you can, because you don't want to be stuck having to eat these, you know, slop foods forever because you're getting ingredients that are keeping you sick.
Yeah.
So be as clean as you can eating, and absolutely read ingredients. But you can be more creative than you realize with this.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I know how to cook a few things well, but I'm not Well, I was thinking about that earlier. You know, I wonder how many people actually cook anymore.
Not as many as should. See, this is the thing. None of us have the time. The reality is we should only shop on the outer rims of the grocery stores and not ever get to the prepared anything. But that's not the way life is. So
I've got all the time in the world, but I hate to cook.
And that's enough. All right. So I don't think that you you have to, but you'll want to without a doubt you'll want to read ingredients as far as that goes. You know, like for instance, if I'm going to eat frozen ravioli, I'm going to make it Amy's spinach ravioli. Because Amy's is a pretty good... Now, I don't like their other ravioli, but their spinach ravioli, and God forbid you get the one that is all vegan. Oh, my God. That'll kill you. But,
no, I don't get any of that stuff.
Right. No, I made a mistake once and damn near... Well, anyway, it wasn't a pretty night.
Oh, God.
Right, exactly. And that was just on two bites. I'm like, no. But their regular spinach ravioli, I think, is actually good. And there's very little objectionable things in it. There's another brand, I think it's like Scott and John's or John and Scott's, and...
I get this stuff. They've got a shrimp Alfredo.
Yes, they do. That's right. The shrimp Alfredo is very nice, but you have to eat two of them because they don't give you much.
I know, that's the problem. Usually I eat that in a salad, and if I can't have salads right now, it's...
No, exactly. No, we'll just eat two of them. That's what I do. Just mix them together in a bowl, and then it's enough food. You can do this. Now, I can't believe the show is over, and I feel terrible about this because we lost Carl and Tubby and Steve and Eduardo, but I hope that they will all call back next week. And in the meantime, I want to report from you next week on what you've eaten.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Fran. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
All right. So, see, you know, life is better for you. You can eat what you want. And I wish I could continue to talk, but that's not the way it works. So we'll say that, well, thank Adam for keeping us on the air. Couldn't do it without him. Well, thank John for screening your calls. But above all, I thank you for calling. And I'm so sorry I didn't get to you. But remember, at 10 o'clock, I talk to myself. So try to set an alarm and call earlier. Until Monday, well, there's a pre-recorded show of last week's music trivia for tomorrow night, but then the next live show is on Monday for Monday Night Trivia. Until then, that's a wrap. I'm Raleigh James. It's WGN Radio.